walk across the courtyard towards the library. I can hear the insects buzz and the leaves beneath my feet.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. I'm Athenia, chair of the Kodiak Public Library Association and host of your show today. And what a great show it is we have for you. Our Beyond the Cover interview today with Tayton is with Paul Morgan Stettler, founder and producer of Letters Aloud, the show that's coming to the Gerald C. Auditorium this Thursday, put on by the Kodiak Arts Council, who we're very grateful is helping us to get these fantastic interviews. Later on our show, we've got some great book reviews for you in the Community Roar segment, or Rave Over Amazing Reads, including Bob Ross, who delves into the books in the Alaska Room at the Kodiak Public Library. It's a little bit of history and a book review all in one, and in this month's review, he talks to us about the very beginnings of the radio station, KODK. Stay tuned for that. I'm also going to let you know of all of the activities that the Kodiak Public Library Association is working on, as well as give you an update on what's happening at the library this month. So, tune in. We have a great hour ahead of us. Now, let's get to Tayton and his Beyond the Cover segment with Paul Morgan Stettler.
It's not like you're not trying, with a pencil in your hair, to defy the beauty the good Lord put in there. Simple little bookworm.
This is Tayton, and welcome to Beyond the Cover, our segment in Dog-Eared Reads where we'll talk with authors, musicians, and other performers coming to or living in Kodiak. On today's segment of Beyond the Cover, we'll chat with Paul Morgan Stettler, founder and producer of Letters Aloud. Through the personal letters of some of history's most famous and infamous characters, Letters Aloud explores the high price of fame and how it has evolved and devolved over the years, and includes a funny, poignant, and moving experience with live musical accompaniment and a dynamic slideshow. Letters Aloud will be performing in Kodiak on Thursday, November 12th at 7 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. You can purchase tickets at kodiakartscouncil.org, through the Kodiak Arts Council office in the auditorium foyer, or by calling 486-5291. Tickets will also be available at the box office 1 hour before the show. Paul Morgan Stettler, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I appreciate being here.
To start us off, Paul, for those who may not be familiar with Letters Aloud, what can attendees expect at the upcoming performance?
What Letters Aloud is, we're a live show where we take private letters written from famous people, sometimes infamous people, and even normal people like you and me, and we read them in front of a live audience. And the idea is that what we do is we'll pick a theme. And the theme that we're bringing to Alaska for our Alaska tour and to Kodiak is fame and what fame means, what it means to want to be famous, to achieve fame, things of that sort. And then we have probably 24 letters, maybe more, from famous people throughout history that touch upon that subject. And we explore the theme that way. And it tends to be just a very fun, enlightening, sometimes extremely funny, and oftentimes very moving show.
That sounds like a really unique idea and show and performance. How did you come up with the idea?
You know, it's funny. It combines two of the things that I love the most. And the first thing is theater. I've been a theater artist for 20 years, and I'm a big fan of telling stories live on stage, and how, if that's done well, how powerful an experience that can be to an audience. And I'm also a literature buff, and so I have a hobby for many years of reading some of the selected letters of my cultural heroes. And it just seems to me that there's a commonality between those two. And I had a day where there's a number of blogs that have come online over the last 5 or 6 years that are posting more and more of these letters. They're out there for the world to see, and I'm kind of gobbling them up. And I had a moment where I thought this would make for a great stage show because they both have the common element of, especially in theater, where you're sort of eavesdropping in on private interactions between characters. And with letters, if it's not a letter written to you, again, you're eavesdropping in on a letter that was written to somebody else. And we're a bit of a culture of voyeurs, and so I kind of look at this as the reality TV of the literary mindset is the way I kind of put it these days.
Right, right. So you mentioned that you find a lot of the letters online. Yeah, on your website, you have sample readings of letters from Kurt Vonnegut to a group of students, a rejection letter from a publisher to a writer, the original cover letter from Hollywood screenwriter Robert Parash. And I guess you're going to have a couple letters for us today. Talk a little bit more about how you find the letters.
Yeah, that's a great question. They're surprisingly accessible. I mean, there are just volumes and volumes of books out there, and I'm spending more and more time at the library, and I've got stacks of books at home. But also, what's been fascinating are, like I said, these blogs and websites that have cropped up. There's a website called Brain Pickings that has tons of great letters, mostly from literary figures. BuzzFeed has a lot. There's one of my favorite websites called lettersofnote.com, and they've got well over 1,000 letters in their database. And so finding letters is not the problem. It's about the real thing is figuring out what to put in a show. And what I tend to do is if I find a letter that speaks to me in some way and that I think that would play very well in a show, I hold on to that. And then once we pick a theme for the show, and so far we've done, this will be our fifth different episode. So we've done a Father's Day show, a Veterans Day show, a love letter show, and then this will be our fourth one. And once I choose the theme, then I have to look at the letters that I like, see what fits, and then it's just a matter of going out there and searching for letters that would fit the theme that I want. And then once I have enough letters to fill out a whole show, then it's a matter of putting them in the right order that kind of creates a narrative arc that the audience can follow and enjoy.
Sounds like a very creative process.
It's really fun, yeah. I mean, because it really is about, there are some fantastic letters out there that just don't feel like they would work for this type of show. So, I mean, I'm still holding on to some. But, yeah, it really is a Rubik's Cube of curating to make this the particular show work.
Are a lot of the letters you mentioned, you're able to find them in all these cool websites. So are some of them in the public domain, or do you have to ask permission for any of them?
Well, most of the stuff that we read are in the public domain. They're old enough or they've been around, long enough that there's, nothing, holding us back from reading them out loud. We're not publishing them. We're simply taking a letter and reading it, reading it out loud. So I don't think we have any issues there. And the nice thing, too, with the websites is that oftentimes you get a chance to see an image of the letter. And that really makes for something fascinating, too, is to see the handwriting of whoever wrote the letter or the typewriter font or what have you. And it really harkens back to a different way people used to communicate. And in the show, we have a slideshow, so you get a chance to see pictures of whoever was writing the letter. And then when we do have images of the letter itself, we will we'll show that as well so the audience can kind of see what we're reading.
It seems like that would really add an extra dynamic to the performance, being able to actually see the letter itself while it's being read.
Yeah, it adds to the live and collective experience that we have together.
Well, I understand you might have a couple of letters you could potentially share with us today.
Sure, yeah. This is one of my favorite rejection letters of all time. Gertrude Stein, who was, a mainstay of the Lost Generation writers back in the 20th century, all the expatriates that lived in Paris back in the 20s. And she was a mentor to Ernest Hemingway and Ezra Pound and people like that. And her writing style was a very experimental, non-linear. She relied on a great amount of repetition. Some of her most famous quotes are, "A rose is a rose is a rose, and there is no there there." So she had sent out one of her manuscripts, a book called The Making of Americans, to numerous publishers, and here is one of the letters she got in response to her. And this was a very complicated novel, so lots of repetition in this book. So here's what she got from a publisher by the name of Arthur C. Fifield. April 19, 1912. Dear Madam, I am only one, only one, only one. Only one being, one at the same time. Not two, not three, only one. Only one life to live, only 60 minutes and 1 hour. Only one pair of eyes, only one brain. Only one being. Being only one, having only one pair of eyes, having only one time, having only one life, I cannot read your manuscript 3 or 4 times. Not even one time. Only one look is enough. Hardly one copy would sell here. Hardly one, hardly one. Many thanks. I am returning the manuscript by registered post. Only one manuscript by one post. Sincerely yours, A.C. Fifield.
So that's quite the rejection there.
Yeah. And, you know, they say, you know, what is it? Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So he clearly was giving her back a little bit of what he got in the reading of her book.
Right, right.
So I thought that was quite unique. And, you know, the fact that he took the kind of time to, you know, how easy would it be just to say thank you, but no thank you, and for him to take the time and the wit to craft a letter like that, I think is just genius.
Absolutely. So what do you look for in a letter for the stage? Obviously, this one is following some of Gertrude Stein's rhythms and whatnot. You mentioned that you have a handful that you're like, oh, these wouldn't quite work.
Again, it's a little bit of my theater training and background, and it's about, you know, we talk a lot about in the theater that when you do a play, it's not about the day that nothing happened. It's about something that's happening right now. It's immediate. And when I find letters that have something immediate happening, when whoever is writing, there's something at stake, that tends to leap to the top of the pile. Also, humor is a huge thing for me. When there's real good sense of humor and thought that's been put into the letter. And then it comes down to when people who write these letters are writing about something that they care deeply about and are trying to work out a problem, those tend to work out as well. So those are some of the things that I look for.
Okay. So what do you think people gain by hearing letters read aloud rather than just, you know, finding them on the website and reading them themselves or what have you?
I think that if we just took some random letters and read them out loud, it would be an interesting, fun experience, a bit of a lark. And I think there'd be something to that. But what seems to be happening in the shows that we do is that the way we craft the show is that we do take the audience on a journey. While it's not a fully linear journey because the letters were not meant, I mean, they transcend time. We go back and forth from, you know, the 1800s all the way up to, you know, current times. But if we can take the audience on a journey of what it means to want something, to achieve something and maybe lose something, and to hear some of our cultural heroes talk in depth about that, it's a collective experience that can be pretty powerful. I mean, the audiences that we've had have just been delighted by this, and there's a simplicity to it because we really are just reading letters. We do have a wonderful accordionist that will accompany us on certain letters, and we get some music there. But it's a real simple thing, but it's very very powerful, and it's. I don't know. I think of it as like a handshake with the past. These people just leap out at you. It feels immediate. It's a chance for us to kind of reconnect with our past.
So there, you mentioned that you often do each show as its own theme, and I think you're bringing a Kodiak fame. Are there any particular themes that have resonated more than others with audiences?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. Well, we're about to do a Veterans Day show. Just a couple of weeks before we fly out to Kodiak, we're going to be here in the Northwest, and we're going to do a couple of performances of our Veterans Day show. And that's a very powerful show because the audience tends to be current and, you know, retired veterans. And having them hear letters that connect to the experiences that they had during wartime is quite powerful.
It seems like it really could be, yeah. What about for you personally? Are there any particular letters or one that really affected you more than others? And I guess, was it something that you read right away and felt that way, or maybe happened when you saw it on the stage?
You know, it's funny. That changes all the time. I mean, I do have a garage full of all of my old memorabilia, and I've had to break those out. And so it's funny, I'm putting together a Mother's Day show now for next year. And I was trying to find letters that my mom had written to me when I was younger. And I came across, in fact, I'll share this if you don't mind. I came across a letter that was written to my mother, my senior year in high school. And I didn't know this letter existed. So it really surprised me. And the backstory is that I was a pretty good high school football player. And I made a couple of all-star teams. And I grew up in Southern California. The LA Times invited me to this brunch, you know, at the end of the season for some of the top football players of that year. And they invited my father to join me, but not my mom. And my mom at the time worked for a law firm where she was a secretary to this attorney named Donald Wallace. And so this letter is from Donald Wallace to the Los Angeles Times. He apparently went to school with the guy who was the director of special events. And I'll read, if you don't mind, just a little glimpse of what he wrote.
Yeah, please.
He writes, he's writing to Glenn Davis, and he writes, "Dear Glenn, you are honoring my secretary's son, Paul Stettler, as one of the LA Times All Orange County football team selectees at the Sunday brunch December 21st. But you have only invited the fathers to share in this once-in-a-lifetime occasion. Paul Stettler's mother has been as much a part of the success of Paul as his dad. She, as well as the other mothers, I presume, would love to be a part of this event, even if she paid her own way. When you went to West Point and I went to Annapolis, things were all male and very macho. Today, our academies educate, train, and honor young women as well as young men. Glenn, you and I must also lead in today's changed society. Keep up the good work. Warmest regards, Donald C. Wallace." And in the bottom of this letter is Glenn Davis's response in handwriting, and it says, "Dear Don, by all means, his mother is welcome. Please convey." And so that really surprised me, and what I sort of found fascinating about that is, first of all, he went to bat for my mom, which I thought was just so touching, but he also kind of went to bat for an outdated way of life and saying, you know, this is ridiculous for us not to invite the moms to this, and let's be better about it. I think that's pretty powerful to me.
Yeah, it sounds like a really just awesome find, and like you mentioned, yeah, both the personal connection and the connection to culture and that change and
yeah,
progression.
And, you know, and here's the thing, too, like when we talk about, you know, the way we communicate right now, it's emails, it's texts and all that, it's ephemeral. It goes by so fast. I'm looking at this letter. I wish I could show it to you. It's dated, it's yellowed, it's on a lawyer's stationery, so I see the date. You can see who it was CC'd to. I see a couple of typos. And then this wonderful handwritten response. You just don't get that from the way we communicate today. And so I think that's another thing this show does, is it kind of shows how, at what price convenience. You know, we've gotten, you know, there's nothing as convenient as the way we can communicate now, but what are we missing in that?
We definitely move from letters and emails, and now it seems like Facebook and texting are really kind of primary communication tools. Could you speak a little bit more about that shift and that balance between that convenience and what we've lost? What do you feel like we've lost?
You know, it's funny. I rely on our modern conveniences, and I'm very grateful for them. But I think one of the things we lost is the language. You know, we're condensing words and to the point that we don't even need to, and you know, we're having autofill, you know, and sometimes you'll look at the autofill and you'll think, oh yeah, that's better than what I was going to say. It's making us lazy. And when you read these letters, and I think when our audiences come to see these shows, what really strikes them is just how thoughtful people are. And it's not just these, you know, extremely talented literary icons. It's just regular old people who would sit down and at a desk or wherever and put out a take out a pen and a piece of paper and think about what they're going to say and realize that if they make a mistake, they're going to have to start over again. And so what's happening is we're, you know, and on top of that, you know, like I said, looking at this letter, feeling this letter, the being able to feel it and touch it, it's a connection. It's a real connection to the past. I'm holding a letter that is, what, it's 35 years old. It's right here. You know, I have letters from my father that, you know, he used to write to me on a half a sheet of paper. I probably got 200 half sheets of paper that, you know, I can break out at any time. My kids are going to have to look up online the texts and emails that I sent them, you know, so we have lost something.
So it sounds like a lot of it's about the time then that somebody spends to take with a letter or a note.
I think so, yeah.
So do you personally write letters, if I can ask that? And if so, in what situations and who do you write
them to? I'm getting a lot better. I mean, I have to now. I feel like I've accidentally sort of put myself in a position where I'm advocating for this. And so every year now I'll take off and go sit in the coffee shop and I'll make sure that I write a letter to my wife on Valentine's Day. I have two young kids, and one of the gifts my parents gave me when I was very young was they wrote a handful of letters when I was, you know, 2, 5, 10 years old, and they put it away in a book so that I could read later as I was an adult. And so I thought that was a wonderful gift, and so I've done the same thing with my kids. I'm trying to be a little bit better about that, and it does. It's when you can put all your electronics away and you take out a piece of stationery and a nice pen, it's a completely different experience. You really have to take the time and reflect before you put your words down on paper.
Right. It slows us down a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we have a few minutes left, so maybe just a couple more questions. You know, as we're preparing for the performance, we're going to meet not just you, but the other performers. Could you tell us a little bit about them, who they are? Do they each specialize in reading different types of letters and so on?
Yeah, there's two fantastic actors, Todd Beadle and Rebecca Olson. Todd is a buddy of mine. We went to graduate school together way back at Penn State in the 90s. And he's actually from Alaska, so it's a chance for him to come back and kind of connect with his roots. But he's been doing work, you know, regional theater all for years and years, and spent a lot of time down in Los Angeles. And he's currently living in Spokane doing theater there. So it'd be great to reconnect with him, too, because we haven't seen each other in a while. And then Rebecca Olson is a very successful actress here in Seattle who does a lot of stage work, and just thrilled to get them. They don't necessarily specialize in reading any letters. We're not trying to imitate personalities. I mean, what I want is just the best possible actors who can really get to the heart of what the letter is trying to say and what the letter writer is trying to convey. So if it's a letter by a personality that we may recognize, there might be a hint of who that person is, but we're not really trying to go down the road of imitation.
Well, it certainly sounds like it'll be a fun time. Do you have a letter you could leave us with today?
Absolutely. I've got this one was written by Jacqueline Suzanne in 1942. And Jacqueline Suzanne was an actress, but she also wrote the very campy novel Valley of the Dolls. And at the time, she was married to Irving Mansfield, who was an extremely successful film and television producer. And they lived a very, very decadent lifestyle. But after 3 years of marriage, he was drafted into the Army. And here's a very short letter that she wrote to him in 1942. Irving, when we were at the Essex House, and I had room service, and I could buy all my Florence Lustig dresses, I found that I loved you very much. But now that you're in the Army and getting $56 a month, I feel that my love has waned. And that's it.
Okay. Very clear about her feelings.
Yes, very clear about her feelings, absolutely. And then, and if you have a moment, like I have one more here that might be kind of fun.
Sure, yeah, we do.
So this was written by a novelist who was a contemporary of Stein's and Hemingway's, and he wrote this In 1924, he was beginning to enjoy some success, and he sent a draft to his newest novel to his editor, Maxwell Perkins, along with this very short letter. October 27, 1924. Dear Max, under separate cover, I'm sending you my third novel. I think that at last I've done something really my own, but how good my own is remains to be seen. After you've read the book, let me know what you think about the title. I have alternatives. Trimalchio at West Egg, or The High-Bouncing Lover. Naturally, I won't get a night's sleep until I hear from you. As ever, Scott. And Scott, in this case, was F. Scott Fitzgerald, and the novel was The Great Gatsby. So I find that fascinating that he was, this close to renaming The Great Gatsby The High-Bouncing Lover.
And that'd be quite the title change.
Yes, I'm not sure I would have wanted to be assigned that back when I was in high school.
Well, Paul Morgan Stettler, thanks so much for talking with us today and for sharing some really cool letters. It'll be an exciting performance here in a couple weeks. We'll love to welcome you here in Kodiak.
Oh, thanks, Tate, and I really appreciate it. Nice to talk to you.
Letters Aloud will be performing in Kodiak on Thursday, November 12th at 7 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. You can purchase tickets at kodiakartscouncil.org. Through the Kodiak Arts Council office in the auditorium foyer, or by calling 486-5291. Tickets will also be available at the box office 1 hour before the show. This is Tayton. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Cover and Dog-Eared Reads. Until next time, happy reading.
Gertrude Stein said that's enough.
I know that that's not enough now.
Gertrude Stein said that's enough. Gertrude Stein said that's enough.
I know that that's not enough now.
Gertrude Stein said that's enough. Gross ability. There is no rose ability.
All right, that song there was Rosability by Idlewild. And I want to say thanks again to Tayton and Paul Morgan Stettler for that fantastic interview for the Beyond the Cover segment. Again, the Kodiak Arts Council, we are so grateful that they work with us to get these fantastic interviews. And I hope you all go to the show this Thursday. It sounds like it's going to be great. So now let's talk about some of the things that the Kodiak Public Library Association is doing. You might have seen us at the AAUW Bazaar last weekend. We were giving away kids' books for free and handing out pens and getting some new members. So if you missed us and want to become a member of the KPLA, we would love to have you join us. All you have to do is check us out at www.kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org. You can register to become a member there. You can also email us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com. We are always checking our email. Anything you want to send us, if it's a book review you want to send us, if you want to join, you know, if you have an idea for something that the Kodiak Public Library Association might be interested in, we always want to hear from you. Please reach out to us. You can also find us on Facebook, of course, where we like to post pictures of some of the events we've got going on, as well as some of the things that the Kodiak Public Library itself is doing, such as the movies that they're showing. They're showing some great movies lately at the Kodiak Public Library, so we like to advertise that on our Facebook page. So let's talk about some of these things that KPLA is up to. We are working with Michelle Cornejo to do a photography workshop. She actually had the first one last weekend as well, November 8th on Sunday. She did DSLR Photography 101. I think that was a lot of fun. But she's doing another class, DSLR Photography 201. That's being held November 29th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. The cost for that is $60. And it's about, you know, intermediate level photography with some file organization and post-production involved as well. So if you're interested in that class, you have to have Adobe Lightroom or Lightroom CC loaded on your computer already, and your computer and battery there. You have to bring a digital SLR camera, battery and memory cards, and a card reader or USB cable, and maybe some water and snacks, because it's a, you know, it's a four-hour workshop, so that sounds like a great time. Michelle is an exhibiting artist, freelance freelance photographer. She has a MFA in photography and experience as a university professor, as well as a photo editor intern for the National Geographic Society. She's worked as a photographer's assistant and an expedition leader, and she is an experienced workshop instructor. So this could be a fun thing if you're at all interested in photography. If you want more information on this workshop, Michelle Cornejo is who you're going to reach out to. Her email is Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, Cornejo, C-O-R-N-E-J-O, @gmail.com. You can also call the library, of course, at 486-8686 if you're interested in signing up for the workshop, which, again, is being held on November 29th. That's a Sunday from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. We're also really excited to be able to sell tickets for Godspell. So if you want to go see Godspell, come and get your tickets down at the Kodiak Public Library. Godspell, the musical production, is being put on by the Kodiak Baptist Mission, and tickets to the show are $10. This show is going to run from November 13th to November 22nd. Very exciting. We want to see you at the show. Thank you to the Kodiak Baptist Mission for letting us be a part of this exciting musical. Also, at the end of the month, the Kodiak Public Library Association is going to help out with a Sunday Sounds by selling CDs of the Kodiak Balalaika group. So on Sunday, November 22nd, if you want to hear the Kodiak Balalaika group live, you have to come down to the Kodiak Public Library. They're going to be performing between 2 and 3 p.m., and we are selling their CDs. So this is a great opportunity to see some Kodiak music. There are a lot of gifted musicians in town, and every month the Kodiak Public Library features some of them. So again, November 22nd, you want to check that out. And this whole season is the Altered Book season. We had the Altered Book workshop with Jacqueline Madsen last month, but the Altered Book fever is continuing. The theme this year for the Altered Book event is Where the Wild Things Are, and you have until the new year to get your Altered Books done, because in February, that's when we're going to be having our big Altered Book event. So don't forget, you want to be working on your art projects now so that they're ready in the new year. The fourth annual Altered Book show is being presented by the Kodiak Public Library Association, along with the Kodiak Arts Council and the Kodiak Public Library. We are also sharing our theme with Galley Tables. That's their theme for their February show. So here's how it works. You take your artistic inspiration, you alter a book to the theme of wildness in any of its many forms. Then you fill out an entry form and enter by February 1st, 2016. There's a show February 5th from 5 to 7 where we'll be displaying all of the altered books that have been turned into us, and that show will be running at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium from February 5th through to February 29th. If you want more information or you want an entry form for your altered book project, you get that at the Kodiak Arts Council office. You can call them at 907-486-5291 or visit them at www.kodiakartscouncil.org for all of the information. Wow, we sure are happy to be working with so many other groups in town to bring you these fantastic events. Now I want to take a little break and maybe play a song before we head into the Community Roar segment of the show. We have some great book reviews coming up. Bob Ross is going to talk to us about how KODK radio station first started and a little bit about Alaska's history. Astrid Mueller's back again with a nonfiction review for the entrepreneurs and businessmen out there. And we've also got Nia and Katie doing their book talk of young adult books. Leanne Schmelzenbach is also on the show today giving us a book review from a Brandon Sanderson book. I actually am a big fan of Brandon Sanderson's writing as well, so I'm excited to see that book on the show today. But first, let's get to some music. We're still sticking with the book-loving theme, so this song is Books from Boxes by Maximo Park.
Night falls and towns become circuit boards. We can beat the sun as long as we keep moving. From the air, stadium lights stand out like flares, and all I know is that you're sat here right next to me. We rarely see warning signs in the air we breathe. Right now I feel each and every fragment. This paper trail leads right back to you. You say you need me to step outside. You spent the evening unpacking books from boxes. You passed me up so as not to break a promise. Scattered Polaroids and sprinkled words around your collar in the long run. You said you knew that this would happen. Well, this is something new, but it turns out it was borrowed too. Why does every letdown have to be so thin? Rain explodes at the moment that the cab door closed. I feel the weight upon your kiss ambiguous. You have to leave, I appreciate that. But I hate when conversation slips out of our grasp. You spent the evening unpacking books from boxes. You passed me up so as not to break a promise. Scattered Polaroids and sprinkled words around your collar in the long run. You said you knew that this would happen. Two bodies in motion, this is a matter of fact, it wasn't built to last. Two bodies in motion, this is a matter of fact, it wasn't built to last. You spent the evening unpacking books from boxes. You passed me up so as not to break a promise. Scattered Polaroids and sprinkled words around your collar in the long run. You said you knew that this would happen. Pounding rain continued its big fall, and we decided just to write. After all, after all, the pounding rain continued its bleak fall. We decided just to write. After all.
Yeah, I really like that song. That, again, was Books from Boxes by Maximo Park. Now let's get into the community roar or rave over amazing reads segment of Dog-Eared Reads. If you have a book that you've read and you want to do a book review for me on Dog-Eared Reads, I would love that. You can always call me, Athenia, at 539-7660, and we can arrange to meet at KMXT radio station to record your book review, or you can record it on your own device and then email it to us at kpla.alaska@gmail.com, and then we will get it on the show for you. You are always welcome to also stop by the Kodiak Public Library. They have tablets and laptops there with the app on it that you can record your book review right at the library, save it, and then we'll get it from there. There are lots of ways, if you've read a good book, to share it with the rest of the town. The first book review I have for you today is from Nia and Katie and their book talk.
Hello and welcome back to Katie and Nia's Book Talk. This is our second airing of it, and I'm really excited because we're going to be reviewing one of my favorite books, which is called Peter and the Starcatchers by Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson.
This book is great because it's kind of the prequel to the movie Peter Pan. It tells you how the magic came to be, how Tinkerbell was created, why there are mermaids, why Peter Pan can fly, and how he stays forever young.
Yeah, I really like that someone decided to make a prequel series. It makes Peter Pan just a little bit more relatable. Like, it gives you an explanation. I know I'm always questioning children's movies. Like, why is this happening? How is this happening? Well, this is finally an explanation.
I wish someone would do this for all the Disney movies. If someone could create prequels for all of the movies, that would be great. So someone get on that, please. This book, it takes place in this orphanage
run
with this boy named Peter. And right away, you know that this boy named Peter is Peter Pan.
Because his name is Peter. Peter stays at this orphanage with a few other orphan boys, and it's run by this mean guy named Gremkin.
And then he decides to send them away. But
on a ship, which is not as good as the other ship docked there, so the boys are a little bit resentful, more so than they already are.
On this boat, they see this trunk being loaded aboard.
Loaded by these two burly really men. Dumb guys.
And little do they know that this trunk actually contains a magic substance.
It does? She thinks I didn't read the book. I did. I read the book, Nia. I read it. Read the book. Who couldn't have? I couldn't put it down.
I really liked the plot of this book. It was very complex, but not so much that you got lost. It had very well-developed characters, especially Peter.
Peter came out of his shell so much in this book. I thought it was fantastic, and the way he showed dominance over the other boys, it really made me want to read it more.
One thing I liked about this book was that it wasn't just Peter whose character was developed. Some of the other characters, such as Hook and Molly and some of the other boys, they had really good personalities.
I think my favorite character was Molly. Her personality was really one I could relate to and one I really liked.
She was really energetic and enjoyable, and it was just fun reading her thoughts and what she thought about certain things. And she was just... Molly isn't like the usual dim-witted female character to be saved by all the guys.
Yeah, and I think that definitely played into their romance. Like, he wouldn't like her if she was dim-witted, you know?
She was definitely adventurous and didn't want to be left behind and definitely wanted part of the action.
That's what made Peter really fall for her, I think.
I just like obviously they're a little young, but you can definitely tell that they're going to fall in love later on in the other books. Did we mention that there are other books in the series? There are, I think, 4 books in the series, and you should definitely read them all because all the books are as well written and as engaging as this one is.
Yes, sirree. Only Barry and Pearson could make a prequel, an entire series.
Thank you guys for listening. We had a great time discussing this book, and you guys are definitely going to have a fun time reading it.
Peter and the Starcatchers by Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson.
Keep on reading, you guys.
Hello and welcome to another in the series of book reviews from the resource archive of materials contained in the Alaska Room of the Kodiak Public Library. My name is Bob Ross, and it's my privilege to review the book Our Hidden Front by William Gilman, published in 1944 by the Reginald and Hitchcock Incorporated of New York. This book was my introduction to Alaska's role in World War II, and for the first time, I understood the strategic role Kodiak played in the early phases of this conflict. I have since read a number of books and viewed an excellent film on Alaska's role in World War II, but I remain convinced that Mr. Gilman's book to be as important and significant as all that followed. And to me, it tells of Kodiak's role the best. The 1944 publication date indicates this publication was under wartime censorship conditions. Mr. Gilman clearly states that much was cut from his book. Much was still then classified. Yet what remains gives a substantial overview of military operations in every major sector of the Alaska Theater and also of Western Canada. And here is the key point for this for me. For this is an eyewitness, trained observer's account. Mr. Gilman, a freelance writer, was a former war journalist who covered the earlier Russian-Japanese War. He believed in the late 1930s that Alaska would become a key theater of action if the U.S. was drawn into war with Japan. He came to Alaska at a time when most journalists were heading to Hawaii, and he extensively documents the contractor base building in Fairbanks, Anchorage, Kodiak, and the Aleutian Islands. He documents the military and personnel equipment buildup in each of these areas. He also documents the Russian Lend-Lease program and the Canadian oil project. He was present at the ribbon-cutting ceremony of the Alcan Highway and accompanied the soldiers in their amphibious operations in both Attu and at Kiska. Here is a period source document written by an experienced war journalist who puts not only the Alaskan theater of the military operations into perspective, he also details in a logical and understandable manner Alaska's importance as a theater of war and the reasons why it is so little known. I was greatly pleased with the extensive detail and time given the Kodiak Forward Operating Base, its significance, and its cost. I found it very helpful in understanding Kodiak's Boomtown 1939 to 1941 construction phase, in understanding Fort Greely's development and that of the subordinate forts at Abercrombie, Tidball, and Smith. Here is an excerpt from his book. The Navy had come to Alaska at long last, and it had come to stay in permanent bases. As a result, the work went slower because there was more details to be covered. Traditionally, the Navy likes to live comfortably. Ladfield's accommodation earned for it the nickname of Country Club, yet its appointments could not compare with those of Kodiak, where officers' apartments had fireplaces and all other amenities to keep the morale up of the expatriates. When the Pearl Harbor blow fell, Kodiak was 38 months old and had grown in size from a project of $11 million to one 7 times that sum. Docks were still to be built, plain revetments to be blasted out, and the bulk of the artillery still to be installed for the island's defenses. However, a hangar and runway were finished. The base itself was guarded by Marines. The outer defenses were entrusted to the soldiers of Fort Greely under the leadership of Major General Charles H. Pete Corlett, who looked like Walter Houston and knew Alaska well from previous service there. With the aid of bright assistants like Captain Roy Kraft, originator of the Kodiak Bear, an audacious Army newspaper with more circulation than any paper in Alaska, civilian or military, General Corlett built up a brand of morale which contrasted sharply with that of all other Alaska Army posts, and demonstrated that soldiers could be kept busily content, although not necessarily happy, in the fog and drizzle of their island isolation. Some were lucky enough to take over their anti-aircraft and coast artillery nests, the hunting lodges on smaller surrounding islands to which millionaire sportsmen had come in their hunts for the famed Kodiak bear, Alaska's brownie, largest carnivore on Earth. Others learned to ski and skate. Their rebel radio station, KODK, a 15-watt mite operating without FCC permission and giving the impression that it had Bing Crosby right in the studio, became a post-hobby and was no less popular after it required legality. Prize two was the Kodiak Bear, which could be a little salacious and a little satiric, as when it mocked the directives with an article, "What to Do in Case of Sunshine," warning the Kodiak GI that this was an understandable phenomenon which need not cause undue alarm when, as sometimes happened, it shone on that drenched island. It displayed a kindly solicitude for folks back home to whom Kodiak soldiers relayed their copy when it pasted a duck feather on the ear of one issue, explaining the staff had just partaken of a fine wild duck and wanted less fortunate readers to have some too. This high humor was the more striking in that all informed persons at Kodiak, and more so at Dutch Harbor, knew how precarious was their position on December 7, 1941. The bases, Army and Navy alike, had been started too late, and the tempo at which they were being built was an easygoing one. The Sims Drake Puget Sound Company, which dominated construction of the Navy bases, figured in January 1941 that it would take another 5 to 6 years to finish Kodiak. When war came, that figure was reduced to 2 years. I believe The Hidden Front by William Gilman to be a must-read for anyone interested in Kodiak's role during World War II. I would even rank it above The Thousand Mile War in order of books to read toward getting a factual solid foundation for the Alaska campaign in general and Kodiak's role in specific. I hope you have enjoyed this month's book review, The Hidden Front by William Gilman. My name is Bob Ross, and I look forward to bringing you a future selection of the books from the Alaska Room in your Kodiak Public Library. Thank you for listening.
Hi, everyone. It's Astrid Mueller again, the brand designer and web designer here on the island who's crazy about girl power and empowering women. So I have the book for you today that is one of my favorite books of all time. I bought this book about 7 times, if not more. I've given it to all my interns as a gift or inspiration because I love it so much. I think it's simply inspiring and awesome. The name of the book is The Art of Possibility. It's by Rosamund Stone Sander and Benjamin Sander. It's super unique because it's a fusion of different expertises. Rosamund Stone Sander is a family therapist and cutting edge psychologist, and a landscape painter, Benjamin Zander is the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra and a professor at the New England Conservatory of Music. Together, they've written a book that is full of stories of creativity, of possibility, of innovative thinking, of inspiring people, and they've lived the most unique stories you could imagine. Let me give you one example here, and I'm going to read it out of the book. So at one point, Benjamin Zander was traveling to Cuba with his orchestra, and they were going to perform in Cuba. That's the framework here. So the context I'm reading now is, Maestro Guido Lopez Cavillan began rehearsing his work, but it soon seemed evident that the complex Cuban rhythms were so unfamiliar to the American kids that the piece was beyond them. They simply couldn't play it. The maestro became concerned, frustrated, and then resigned himself to failure. He declared from the podium, "I'm afraid this is not going to work. We have to cancel the performance." This outcome was completely unacceptable to me. It was one of the cornerstones of this trip that our young musicians be able to perform with their counterparts. Without thinking, I leapt to the stage and said to the young Cuban players through an interpreter, "Your job is to teach these rhythms to your stand partner." And to the American players, I said, "Just give yourselves over to the leaders sitting next to you. You will get the support you need." I asked the maestro to try again. What happened next startled us all. The focus shifted away from the maestro toward the stand partners. Already more expressive than most young players I had seen, the Cubans became fantastically energized, exuberantly conducting with their instruments, each leading along his American stand partner enthusiastically. The American kids, basking in the lavish attention, gave themselves over to the process and began to play the rhythms the way they were intended to be played. Maestro Gavillan, who appeared as surprised and as pleased as I was, nodded to me that everything would be fine. This is just one of the stories in the book. Once they traveled to London to a really challenged class in a very difficult neighborhood that was rattled by gangs and school dropouts were rampant and all these things. And they played with those kids and inspired an entire school to actually participate with the orchestra. Super inspiring. There's another quote that I have to read from the book where Benjamin Zander talks about the practice of the art of possibility and of lighting a spark. He says, "Our universe is alive with sparks. We have at our fingertips an infinite capacity to light a spark of possibility. Passion, rather than fear, is the igniting force. Abundance, rather than scarcity, is the context." Isn't that amazing? I just love this book, and I have to reread it again. I've read it many years ago, and I'm going to buy it again for myself. I have to read it again. This book is inspiring for anyone, literally. Young and old, business or no business, it's a super great gift for anybody. It's called The Art of Possibility, Transforming Professional and Personal Life by Rosamund Stone Zander and Benjamin Zander. Harvard Business Review Press. Get that book.
My name is Leanne, and today I'm going to talk to you about an amazing fantasy author, but only one of his books, sadly. So the author that I absolutely adore, fantasy, bar none, the best I've read in forever, is Brandon Sanderson. And this particular trilogy, the Mistborn trilogy, is phenomenal. The first book is the only one I've been told I can talk about, though. So I'm going to talk about Mistborn, The Final Empire, though most people just refer to it as Mistborn or Mistborn 1. It was published in 2006. And if you haven't read it yet, you absolutely should. Here is why. Brandon Sanderson creates a world. And you think you know all the rules, and you know most of the rules. But as you read along, you discover you really didn't know anything. And as a person that likes to read a lot and plots tend to be predictable, one of the best things about the Mistborn series is that you start off meeting Vin. She's this little thief. She runs around in her city of Luthadel, the capital city, trying to survive in the underground. And you think this whole story is about Vin. But then Vin meets Kelsier. And Kelsier is a thief crew leader, but he's not like any thief crew leader she's ever known, because he's also a survivor of the pits of Hathsynth. And as all these elements start to get introduced, you go from focusing on this one individual to focusing on a crew of individuals who then have a political impact on a city, which then, of course, has ramifications on the rest of the empire. the brilliant thing that he does with the magic in this world, and it was something I'd never encountered before, is it's not this untouchable, intangible shooting of light out of fingers or eyes or whatever. It's truly a physically bound magic. The people who are able to access the powers have to be able to burn metals, and the metals always come in pairs. So you either have access to one of the eight metals, or you have access to all of the metals, and there's no exception. If you only have access to one of the metals, you're called a Misting. If you have access to all eight, you're a Mistborn, and you can play in the mist. And each pair has its own thing. So, for example, if you don't want people to know that you can do magic, you burn copper. Copper hides the magical beats, the energy impulses that the human body gives off when they're burning a specific type of metal. So copper hides that. The opposite of that is bronze. Bronze allows the burner to access and know what metals someone else is actually burning. So they're a pair, copper and bronze. The other pairs allow for other things. If you can burn iron, you can pull yourself to things or pull them to you. If you can burn its pair, steel, then you can push on things that are metal. Now, Mistborns, of course, have access to all of the powers. And if you haven't figured it out yet, since Vin is the central character, she is, in fact, Mistborn. She figures it out, thanks to Kelsir, the survivor. And so, because the magic plays by the rules, the magic cannot be broken by the rules either. And that, I think, is so phenomenally cool, because rather than saying, here are the rules, and then we're going to break them all, he sticks to the rules. So things happen that you don't want to happen, and things happen that you're like, wait a minute, that can happen. And then he introduces other characters slowly and surely that gain more importance, and they bring in more of the rules of the world. I'm not going to talk much more about the story, though, because I'll totally ruin the whole thing. So without further ado, you should all just go read Brandon Sanderson anything, but especially the Mistborn series. The first one, Mistborn 1, The Final Empire, published in 2006.
Okay, some great reviews there. Thanks again to everybody who gives me a book review for the Community Roar or Rave Over Amazing Reads segment of the show. So we're about to wind up today's episode of Dog-Eared Reads, but before we go, I want to let you know about a few events happening at the Kodiak Public Library this month. The library is still doing its story times, so Wednesdays from 10:30 to 10:50 is infants to three-year-olds, Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 is discovery story time for 4 to 5 year olds, and Fridays from 10:30 to 10:50 is toddler story time. Fridays are also film events, so this Friday the 13th, All Is Lost with Robert Redford will be playing at the Kodiak Public Library at 6:30. The following Friday is The Real Stories with The North Face at 6:30. On the 25th of November, there is the Thanksgiving film of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles at 2:30 p.m. And the last Friday of this month is actually the audiobook club happening at 6:30 p.m. And they're featuring David Sedaris's Live at Carnegie Hall. The library has their Great Kitchen Gardener series continuing this month on the 18th at 6 p.m. with Thanksgiving side dishes. Sunday Sounds, you'll remember, is happening Sunday the 22nd from 2 to 3 p.m. And we, the KPLA, will be selling the Kodiak Bella Leica Group's CD at that event. That'll be a fun one. On Saturday, the library has some events. This weekend, they've got hands-on fiber arts from 1 to 4 p.m. And the following Saturday, the 21st, is the Storyteller's Toolbox, which is a free workshop for those ages 10 to 17 from 1 to 4. The library will be closed on Wednesday, November 11th. For Veterans Day. It will also be closed on Thursday, November 26th for Thanksgiving Day. So much is happening with the Kodiak Public Library and the Kodiak Public Library Association. Check it out. And thanks again for tuning in to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA.
Heaven in your breath, the simplest of pleasures, the world at its base.